Blog Talk Radio.
All day and never find the root. You're gonna get dirty, child, digging for the root. If you're looking for an answer, what's wrong with the truth? Keep digging, child, looking for the root. Look for love, it must be love. Look for love, it must be love. Original is a sin. There's no one who can fix it. It's forgiveness in the end. Look for love. It must be love. Look for love. It must be love. What's wrong with the truth? Keep digging, child, looking for the root. Look for love, it must be love. Look for love, it must be love. It must be love. Look for love. Look for love.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a new edition of Gospel Gold. Of course, you know that Gospel Gold is on every Monday night between the hour of 9 to 10 p.m. Gospel Gold is not just another music program, but it is a program specifically designed for the preservation of traditional African-American gospel music. I am your host, Reverend Michael Rogers. Today, we're not talking about Gospel Gold. Today, we are doing another installment of History Speaks, doing our Black History Month. Black culture and America culture and Black stories are essential to the ongoing story of America. Our faults, our struggles, our progress, and our aspirations. Shining a light on Black history today is important to understand ourselves and growing stronger as a nation. As I said before, I'm glad you have joined us tonight. Tonight, I talk with Mr. Clarence Clay Robinson, a musician, entertainer, songwriter, and band leader. Mr. Robinson has traveled the world and has collected and evaluated information from many primary resources. He has entertained audiences all over the country, and he has composed a new anthem for these turbulent times that we find ourselves living in today. That's why it's essential that we take the time to celebrate and to remember the great things and the great achievements our people have made in history and in the gospel recording industry. So I'm so glad today to have with me Mr. Clay Robinson. He is a personal friend, teacher, and mentor of mine, and I'm glad he was able to join us this morning. Clay, are you with us?
Yes, sir. How you doing there, sir?
Thank you so much for joining us this evening for History Speaks. I wanted just to speak with you just for about an hour here. And one of the things that I wanted to start off with is for you to tell us about your background. How did you start in the music business?
Well, I remember being in the fourth grade and someone came into the classroom and said, does anybody want to play in the band? And that really struck magic with me. I was already in love with the piano, listening to a lady at the church who was a wonderful player. And somehow I could go home and play just like her. So they thought I was something special. I didn't think so, but I loved her music, and I love music, period. And it is one of my stepping stones to want to be in the music business.
What church did you grow up in? What denomination was that?
That's Apostolic Holy Church.
All right. Amen.
Amen. Hey, by the way, you have played, I'm sure you've played the music of Dietrich Haddon.
Oh, yeah.
That's my first cousin, Dietrich Haddon. His grandmother was my mentor in music.
Wow. Okay.
He used to sing in the church, and back in the 50s, the early 50s, we had no microphones.
Mm-hmm.
So you can hear her for a block away. She didn't need a mic.
Wow.
And that was my father's sister, Dietrich's grandmother, and my greatest influence for music.
Okay. When was your first professional gig?
Well, growing up, of course, I played all the way through school. And had a scholarship to go to college, Eastern Michigan University, and went there. And when I got there, I realized I had a problem back home. My girlfriend was expecting me, so I had to drop out. And I was on my own then. I had to go to work in the factory, take care of my family. I was down and out. But what happened was Motown was busy in Detroit, right? And they had the musicians going in and out of town.
Mm-hmm.
So one particular time, they had the musicians all busy. They were all out of town. And I was sitting there, not really practicing much at all. I was working in the factory. Didn't have much time. But they needed a trumpet player for Bobby Womack and Peaches and Herb, who was in town.
Mm-hmm.
So they called me and says, well, all the musicians are going with Motown. Now, can you play Bobby Womack's music? Well, of course, I couldn't at that time. But they said, can you make a rehearsal? And I said, yeah. And, boy, was I afraid, you know. I thought, well, maybe the music business wasn't for me. I was in the working in the factory midnight, and I had a kid to take care of and my wife. So I said, well, this could be a break for me. So I called the factory and said, hey, look, somebody is sick. You see, it was me, actually. And I can't come to work, tonight, because the rehearsal was that night. Was at night, about 10 o'clock. So I couldn't have made it by 11 o'clock shift. So what I did was I made that rehearsal, shaking like a leaf, and there was Bobby Womack and Peaches and Herb's music to play. So I sit down there. I hadn't really read any music since high school. And somehow, miraculously, I was blessed to be able to sight read that music.
Mm-hmm.
The other trumpet player in the band was not a Motown guy. He was Aretha Franklin's band leader. The other trumpet player. It was just two of us playing trumpet. So I made it through 10 nights. And at the end of the 10th night, I was pretty good, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I played for Bobby Lovett and Peaches and Herb. They were together in a show. At the end of the 10 days, he says, Aretha Franklin's band leader says, well, you did pretty good. Says, how would you like to play with us in Las Vegas? And I almost finished. I couldn't believe he's asking me to play in Las Vegas. So I went to Las Vegas. That was my second professional gig. And I was with the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I know that was. Detroit had such musical history. Growing up in Detroit, who were some of the people that you listened to growing up?
Well, I didn't want to be an artist, and I'm a composer and a musical arranger. That's what I did. So there was a guy at Motown who did a lot of arranging over. His name was Paul Reiser. There was a guy from Tennessee named Dale Warren, and a guy named Mike Terry. They were doing the arrangements. Those were the guys that I appreciated. Those are the guys I look for. Those are the guys I sort of follow. I never really got my chance to do nothing but lead sheets at Motown, which was a challenging job. I got $10 for doing each song, so that wasn't bad money. It was better than the factory that I'd been working in. Eventually, I had to leave that job, and it's always a challenge. As soon as you get a good night gig playing music, as soon as you get a good job, then comes the night stuff, and the two don't balance. So yeah. I wound up leaving that job and going out on my own to be a professional musician in the field. After I left Bobby Womack and Aretha Franklin and many others, I was on the stage at least once with all of the Motown acts. We had a Motown Christmas show we used to do, and all the acts were on there. And I had a chance to go up and play with Gladys Knight, you know, Smokey Robinson, we had Tears of a Clown, and the originals, Baby, 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 that.
I remember them, yeah.
I was just blessed to be around those people and to grow up with them. Most of them about my age. I'm 78 years old now. And when I think back, looks like everybody at Motown was about that age. Many of them are gone now, the ones who didn't make 78. But I never really got my chance to do my thing in Motown. So I decided, well, after I went out on the road with Bobby Womack, I went again. After I played with Bobby Womack, I got with the Womack Band for about 6 weeks again. And I was out of Detroit, so when I settled down after that road experience, I was in Washington, D.C. And
now,
that's where I met you, Reverend Rod.
That's right. I know that you had several groups of your own. You were leading several groups of your own. What are some of the groups that you had?
Well, I had a group called World's Fair. I had a group called the E-Wee Band. I had a group, Clay Robinson and Good Life. We played cabarets and stuff around Detroit. There wasn't much money, not enough for me to really take care of my family.
Right.
So I figured, in order for me to make the money, I got to get on the road or either go back to that factory, which I didn't want to do.
I know that's right. Now, as you said before, we met in D.C. at World's Fair with the group World's Fair. One of the things that impressed me about you was that not only are you a composer and an arranger, you were also a teacher, and you were able to get a group of young guys together and discipline them to the point where they could actually be able to go on stage and perform. How did you acquire those type of skills to give each musician their part and to work with them tirelessly, because I know we were hard-headed at times. But how did you develop those type of skills to do that?
Well, I studied before I left Detroit at the Detroit Institute of Musical Arts. And that's where I learned theory. All the workings of music, all of the type of notes, the language itself. And, of course, we had composing there, and I learned to transpose all the instruments. Every instrument doesn't play in the same key.
Right.
So every instrument, yeah, you have to learn. You have to learn the ranges of all the instruments. What do you need to play high? What plays low? What plays in the middle? And how they all sound coming together. I had studied for about a year in Detroit Musical, the Institute of Music, before I came to D.C. And I studied that because I wanted to be an arranger in the studios is what I want to do. And I hadn't had my chance in Detroit. I don't know. They like me, but they never gave me a chance. So coming to D.C., I bought that learning from Detroit Institute of Music with me. And I knew all of the notes for every instrument, and I knew where they belonged in a song. So when I met you guys, I was quite prepared to put a band together of my own. I had been promised a record deal in New York, and that's what I wanted for us.
Right.
To be able to go there and play for Buddha Records. They had promised me that if I put a band together that was worthy, we could come to New York, and that was my plan, and sign a deal with Buddha Records. And that's what I was after when I came to Washington, D.C., you know.
Excellent. So, you know, the club scene in those days was very active, and bands could really go into these clubs, not just in D.C., but other cities as well, and earn a good living. But something happened, I guess, around 1980. I don't know. I think disco music or something came in. How did that affect the live music band? Because you very seldom see live bands now.
Yeah, you're right. Well, the DJs came in. And, you know, a DJ then could entertain a crowd of people all night where musicians have to take a break. And, you know, they get tired.
Yeah.
Musicians have problems because normally musicians don't have any money. And that's what we were like that in those days. We had no money.
Right,
but
right.
We had robbery. We had a good band. I tell you what, that band could have made it, but we had so much working against us. One of the hardest jobs in music is being a band leader. I would never want to be another band leader again because, well, I tell you what, you have to deal with every musician who has a problem. You have to figure that out and make him comfortable so that he will be dedicated to the band, but he has to be able to take care of his family while being dedicated. And a lot of times there weren't jobs for us. I don't think we had many jobs in those days when we were working the band because we weren't working. I wasn't working you guys to play locally. I was working for that one thing, that contract that I was to get in New York.
Right.
And, 'cause it never came to fruition because there was so many things in the way, you know.
Right.
To go to New York in those days for an audition, I mean, first of all, you had to have money for lodging. And back in those days, even the average room in New York was about $100. We couldn't afford that.
Right.
The reason I didn't continue on is because what happened was, you remember a guy named Leon Gibson?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember Leon Gibson?
That's where we practiced.
That's exactly right. He's no longer with us now. But he was a friend of mine all the way up until, well, he passed away about a year ago. But he always gave me guidance. So he came to me one day and said, Clay, I don't understand you musicians. You know, I don't understand you guys. He said, you guys want to play music, but you don't advertise. And I thought, he says, McDonald's advertises every day. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, he's right about that. I have never put an ad in the paper saying a band looking for work. So that's what I did. I put a band, put an ad in the paper, and it was for us to be able to get some music. What happened was I mentioned my background with Motown or being from Motown, and I said, keyboard player for Motown, looking for work. Then is when I got sidelined. The white boys from Virginia started calling me because they wanted the Motown sound. And I wound up working with a bluegrass band first in Virginia, which took me away from you guys.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to ask you. That's what I was going to ask you next. What other types of music have you played?
Well, I tell you what, I got a lot of experience. When I went with that bluegrass band, I learned bluegrass and learned country. But I wound up with three guys named Touch, and they did all kinds of things. They were a variety band. I think that a band should be able to play what people want to hear, and that's what I focused on. Music to please my audiences. If you please an audience and they have fun, they'll come to see you again. So what I learned, which was different from what we were working on, was country, rhythm and blues. We did, of course, bluegrass, and I got with a band. Well, we got a guy from, he was from London, England. He was a drummer, and he did all the Beatles songs. And then we had a guitar player who was second generation Italian, and he did all of the pop songs. And, of course, they had me in there doing rhythm and blues and stuff like that. So we wound up to be a variety band. We could play polkas. We could play anything somebody wanted to hear. And that is how I really got going as far as making a steady living is concerned. Washington, D.C. is where I actually grew up. That's what I say. I became a man in Washington, D.C. And I became a man of some value because of all the experience that I got after I moved out and played with the white boys. After that was over, some guy from California came in here and said, man, you don't need those guys. And he was talking about, I don't need the white boys. You know, I said, what do you mean I don't need them? I need them for everything. You know what I mean? I'm making more money now than I ever made before. And he says, no, these people come. He said, I'm from California. He said, I've been here several times, and every time I come, I look for you guys. And he says, the people come to see you. Wait a minute. You tell me all these white people coming to see me?
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I was a leader and that I had that much, that I was getting that much exposure. He thought I was the leader of the band. No, I'm not the leader of the band. I'm just glad to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
3 years later, that guy came back and say, you still with these guys? He says, look, man, I got a guy I want you to meet. I said, okay. So that was Italian Inn out in Seven Corners, Virginia. The guy was a mob guy. And he called, and they had a lady who had been there at the piano bar. This is playing Spinkle by yourself. You know, which is really scary, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. So he said, I heard a lot of good things about you. If you'd like to come out and audition, I got a woman who's been playing for me for 12 years, and he said she's getting ready to leave. So he said, if you can take this job, it's a good job for you. You know, you got regular customers coming in every night. If you can do the piano bar and play songs that they want to hear, you'll be successful. Well, I had a lot of songs because I had Motown, I had rhythm and blues, I had country, I had bluegrass songs. I was doing the Elton John and things like that. So I went on the gig, and I wound up working there quite a while. And after I got the experience of piano bar, taking requests was one of the things that I enjoy. You know, somebody say, hey, do you know this song? I don't know the name of it, but I'm going to hum a few bars. And somehow they hum a few bars. Oh, I know that, you know.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
It worked for me. And I thought after I did that for a while, I think I was there at Pistone's Italian Inn for about 5 years.
Wow.
And I was no longer a poor man. I was making good money. I bought a home there in Maryland. And it was great. I've made it. This is it. So what happened is I wound up going out west, and I married a girl in D.C., mm-hmm. from D.C., mm-hmm. and she was in the Air Force. So she was traveling all over the place. I said, well, if she's traveling, a lot of places she go, I can go and find music work, you know.
That's right. That's
anyway,
right.
I wound up in Kansas City. I played Kansas City. Then I played Oklahoma City, which was the best place, the best job I've ever had. They love music in Oklahoma. They love piano bars. They love musicians. Then I wound up in Texas. And then I wound up in California. So it was a lot of fun. I saved my money, and I was doing pretty good, you know. So my wife passed away, and then I came back to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. You have had a very interesting career. You also have written an anthem. We're going to play the anthem. I have downloaded the anthem. I'm going to play that, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about who I am. I know who I am. Is that all right?
Thank you, Brother Nate. I really appreciate it.
Okay, I'm going to play that, and then we'll come right back, and we'll talk about this anthem, okay?
Okay.
Every
song for beautiful people. How did this come about? Where did this come from?
Well, you know, I've been all over the country over many years past, and I played this song at family reunions, church, all other kinds of gatherings that teachers have had, and I've been asked to play that in schools and everything. And I noticed not enough of us know it, I thought, for it to be effective as an anthem. You know, and an anthem has, first of all, you have gallantry. Oh, say, can you see gallantry?
Right, right. It has that.
An anthem, thank you. And also, in an anthem, you need to claim victory. As they say, the flag was still there after a fight. It's about a war. You know, it makes the people proud who survived. So I thought, my Africans need this. We need an anthem. And I never meant to try to replace the great James Weldon and his brother for the anthem that we have, Lift Every Voice and Sing. But it's just another anthem. I don't try to want to replace what we have because those guys were here at a time and they wrote that anthem that Negroes at that time really needed. I thought I want to take us another step further. Let's claim victory, which is another thing you have to do in an anthem. It's another element of an anthem. You claim victory over the hard times. Yeah, and we have been through some hard times, but in our anthem right now, we don't claim victory. All right? Victory, I think, for us, after all that we have contributed to this country, 80%, I think I've heard, of what they use in this country was invented by Negroes.
That's right.
And that was before we were able, that was before we were allowed to even go to school, I mean, I've heard the traffic light, iron board, so many other things that we invented, and which is rightfully so. I mean, we were doing all the work, so you always want to find a way to work your make your work easier. But I thought, you know, we need an anthem that claim all those things, gallantry, victory, and I thought, winning a war. I think we have won just a beauty spot. We've had nothing working for us. Of course, we kneel and we pray. We know that. And we know that God has brought us this far. But I want to put all of the blessings that we have inherited and also the victories that we claim. We need to claim a victory, you know, and that's what I want to do. So I said, oh, what a great day. A new beginning. Now that I know who I am, and that's another thing that we haven't really zeroed in of. All of us have, a lot of us have different perspectives of who we are, and a lot of us have stepped away from our Africanity. You know, we need to remember who we really are and agree on who we are. Therefore, now we have a team of believers in one thing, that is who we are. That's why I say that who I am. I know who I am. If you know who you are, then you know what you should be doing. That's just my opinion. That might not be true. But
that's true.
Okay.
That's true. I interviewed Dr. Bruce Bridges a few weeks ago, who wrote a book called Recapturing the African Mind. And basically, the same thing that he was talking about, the same thing that you're saying now.
That's where our power is as a people on this earth. I wanted to put in that hymn the answer to our problem. And that anthem is togetherness. Togetherness is what will make us free. That's what it said in the anthem. Togetherness is what will make us free. That's a simple answer. But mm-hmm. in order to get together, we have to first identify who we are and agree on who we are. Call us whatever you want to. We've been called a lot of things. But if we can agree on who we are, that's power in that. You know, some mm-hmm. people said, oh, I've had black people say, oh, no, I'm no African. Well, that's fine. I didn't write this for you. I'm looking for a team of people who agree that we are, number one, on the same page as far as who we are and what we stand for. I would love mm-hmm. for our kids 20 years from now to be saying, I'm proud to be an African. Oh, what a mm-hmm. great day. A new beginning. Now that I know who I am, I can rise and shine with the Creator in mind and feel proud to be African. So mm-hmm. it's accepted in some places, some circles it has not been accepted that well, but I'm glad that it's here, and I hope that it catches on, and I hope that it will bring us together. I hope that that hymn of mine will stop some young brother that's walking around here with guns thinking about killing people. I want to change his heart, all right? I want to change the heart. You belong to something worthwhile, so don't go throw it away. If we can come together, sisters and brothers, we can solve a lot of our problems. Those mm-hmm. that don't want to be with us, fine. If you don't identify with your Africanity, then you need to be somewhere else. I'm only interested in people who know who want to know who they are and mm-hmm. is not ashamed of their Africanity.
Did you write the music first or did you write the lyrics first?
I did the music first. That cost me a lot of money. I didn't do this for money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are real instruments, real musicians in a real studio. And
I know.
28 mm-hmm. different instruments. Yeah. So I said, you know what I mean? I'm retired now. And God has blessed me to live a comfortable life. And as I said, I wasn't motivated by money. I live in a mm-hmm. state right now that has, since I wrote this song, I live in a state right now where they're burning books, banning African-American studies, and they say these studies have no value. This is what our governor is saying. So, mm-hmm. you know, that really, I said, you know what, I wrote this song at the right time. I don't know any other tool we need other than God to help us through these times. We have to show them that we're proud of who we are. We're not mm-hmm. ashamed of who we are. We're proud mm-hmm. of who we are and the accomplishments we have made, all the contributions, I mean, including rap music and everything else that Americans now use, and the nerve of them to say that our history doesn't have any educational value. It just, mm-hmm. it upsets me. It really does. So I'm glad I wrote the song before they came to that conclusion, and I'm so mm-hmm. glad it's out. It's taken off in Detroit. Of course, that's where I live. I did 3 or 4 podcasts up there, and the main thing right now is New Orleans. New Orleans love me. I'm going there pretty soon, and I'm going to get my song on the list of songs to celebrate Juneteenth. As a matter of fact, one of the links to my website is www.JuneteenthAnthem.com.
Okay, could you say that again?
www.JuneteenthAnthem.com. Mm-hmm. You will get my website there, and it explains everything that I was thinking when I wrote this song. One of the first things I say is I give honor to James C. Weldon, and for the song Lift Every Voice and Sing. And I say clearly that this song does not, I didn't write this song to compete with any other anthem of the world, but to join the other great anthems in the world in lifting up a people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you could say I'm proud of who I am, I mean, that says a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. Another lyric in there is, yeah. I mean, if our kids can say that 50 years from now, when I'm long gone, that is my goal. You know, come up and say, why did you put hip hop in it? Why didn't you put rap in it? I said, no. You don't dance to Old Say Can You See or any of the God Bless America. You don't dance. You listen to the message that's in there.
Yeah,
that's what the, it's an answer, not a song.
You have a, you also have a, another website. Could you give out your website for the T-shirts and for and how someone can download the song? Could you give out that website?
Sure. It's anthem3.com or www.juneteenthanthem.com. You'll get it either way. You know, if somehow. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. The T-shirts. Can you get the T-shirts from that same website?
That's right. It has a store. Go to the store. You can see the T-shirt, and you'll see what you have to do to get it. It's $19.95 to $2.50 shipping, and it's in the store of my website. And also, if you scroll down further, you'll see Facebook. You can get it on Facebook.
Okay. You do have a Facebook page as well?
I'm sorry?
You have a Facebook page as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. You see, somebody told me I have two. So Clay Robinson or Clarence Robinson on Facebook.
Okay.
Or if you need to get – I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. And the T-shirt, again, it says, I know who I am. And it's flying off. I can't keep enough of them. I just ordered 50, and I think I've sold 41 of those. So I'm saying it's a T-shirt. It looks good. People like it. And the name of my company is Oowe Brand, OOWEEBRAND. Oowe Brand. That's the name of my company. So all of my all of my future T-shirts and caps and hoodies will be generated by that company, Oowe Brand. We just got licensed to do business, and I'm so excited about that. You can get it. You can buy a T-shirt on the net from PayPal. You can pay with PayPal. I have yet to connect Cash App to it, but it will be by the end of this day. And also, you can use your credit card.
I'm going to definitely get me one of those T-shirts. Now, who are some of the musicians and singers that worked with you on this album?
Oof. Well, you know, I cut this album this song in three different places. I live in Jacksonville, Florida now. So I used John Stocks from here. He's a trombone player, as you are.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
The brass, of course, I played some of the brass. Some of the music are virtual instruments from a computer software.
Right.
And then I left there. I went to Georgia and I recorded the bass and drums there. Then I went on to Detroit and I put on voices there in Detroit. They're all school who are over music departments. That's why they sound so great on that. Yeah, they're great. And we're working very hard in Detroit to get my song into schools, because the most important people to get this song, if the old folks don't like it, the kids love it. And we haven't had a performance like that yet, and I have not been sanctioned by the schools to even put it in the schools yet. Not yet. But that is one of my focus. Our kids need to be able to wake up and say, oh, what a great day, a new beginning. I know who I am, and I'm proud of that. You know, I'm proud of who I am. You know, that's the message I want to get in through that song. And then, of course, as I say, it contains the answer. It says, every morning I rise and shine with the Creator in mind and feel proud to be an African. Now that my eyes are wide open, I can see what we need. We need to honor each other, for we are sisters and brothers. Togetherness is what will make us free. So this came from heaven. I'm not lying. I was traveling, and I said, you know, I need to write an anthem. But some people, like, you know, James Weldon and his brother, they're from here, in Jacksonville.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. All right. And when I looked at the Juneteenth celebration that just passed, since the government has now made it a national holiday, they didn't even sing the song. They had it in Debbie Reynolds, the dancer, not Debbie Reynolds, the dancer. I don't know. She gave it. Well, she sponsored it at the Super Bowl in California. They didn't do the Black National Anthem. You know, so I said, wait a minute. That means I got to get an anthem. So when I ask people, a lot of people I ask, do you know the Black National Anthem? No. Or they say, no. I had it in school, but I don't remember it. Well, see, we didn't have to study old sayings. Can you see by the dawn's early? Somehow I got those words. I don't remember reading it in a book. You know, so I made the song easy to sing, easy to remember, and collectively we can get these lyrics together. It's a powerful thing, people singing together, believing in one thing. And of course, you being a minister, you know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a very, very powerful song.
I'm so proud of you.
Very powerful song. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I've been ministering and pastoring now for about 25 years. But one of the things I wanted to ask you. One of the things I want to ask you before we got off, we got a few more minutes and about 10 more minutes. But
okay.
One of the things I want to ask, you talked about earlier your background in the Apostolic Church. And of course, when you listen to this anthem, it does have gospel elements to it.
That's absolutely. Well, I can't get past that. That was my training, training as a child.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, was that your intention to make that like that?
Definitely. You know, we as a people, you know, we have an internal yearning to be touched by music. Music touches us because we are such a people who is ready to receive any positive message. Most of our positive messages come from what God has done for us. So I say, if I can get something to remind them. Like I said, this is divinity. It came from me, from heaven. I was through recording or doing anything. I'm retired, and I'm really enjoying my life. I wasn't looking for music. Yes, I can't get past the gospel. I can't get past that. And I know that is what touches us. I needed a highlight, something in this anthem to highlight. And she says, I'm number one in the eyes of my creator. See, we haven't said that. We haven't said we were number one. Well, I'm claiming it. You know, everything we've done, America has taken and used for its good, and we get no residuals, no royalties of residuals from it. They take everything we've done. So let's claim everything we've done. That's our victory in this anthem. Yes, it has church in it.
So what's next for Clay Robinson? What's next? I know you say you're retired and you really don't have to do anything, but what's next? What's next on your calendar?
Well, what has happened is since I released this, I've had several calls from people who want to do music. They want to do real music. Today, we have hip-hop and rap. I didn't want that in my song.
Right.
The people who are listening to that, I want to change their way of thinking if I possibly can. Do all the rapping and the dancing you want to do. But at the end of the day, listen to this message. Yes, what's next for me? I don't know. I really don't feel like it, but I have several people who've called me and want me to produce them in the studio. As I said, I'm 78 years old, and I'm really having fun doing absolutely nothing.
I know how that is.
Bought a piano. I just bought a grand piano and I'm practicing something I never want to do is dance. So I don't know. God has spared me to be here this long. And I don't know. I don't think he wants me just sitting around. So I'm going to do something. I'm going to start doing, I want to impress the young people in another way other than rap and gangster rap and all that stuff. I want to impress them in another way. So in here, in the state that I live in, they're taking books off the shelf and everything like that. I want to do some educational music for our young folks. They have a task ahead of them. You know, they're trying to turn this country into another kind of country. Yeah, and I want our kids to be prepared. We got to be prepared. We got to be proud of who we are and be ready to fight because that's what an anthem is about. An anthem is about fighting. The bombs bursting in air and all that stuff. Hey, it's a fight. So we got to prepare our kids for that. You know, so I'm going to be doing music to reach them, but it's going to be another kind of music. Okay. It's not going to be, it's not going to be what they're used to. And they ain't going to like it right away. But God has made, has prepared me for this. And he's made his pastor's music to be successful. It has to be promoted. So
We got about we got about five more minutes. Is there what lasting statement would you like to leave? What is it that you would like? I know you talked a lot about you wanting to bring people together and young people to have a better understanding of who they are. But if you can summarize that in one statement, what would that be?
Okay. I hope I say this right, too, because sometimes the words don't come out so clear. The most important thing to me is our future in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, if the people in my state and the leaders in my state feel that our Africanity or our study of Black history has no educational value, and of course they're fighting the critical race theory, I want to fight those things because I want to get them out of the way so our kids can be who they are and be proud. So I think in to answer that question, what I'm going to be doing from now on until I leave this earth is spreading the word. I know who I am. If you know who you are, then you know what you should be doing, and that is preserving our legacy, giving the kids to come a reason and a proud reason for being here in this country. We can't leave now, you know what I mean? So we have to fight now. I mean fight for us and our families and our babies. So please join me wherever you can. Let's find out and agree on who we are. And my T-shirt is saying that. Some people don't know who they are. You know, I mean, I've met some. There's, oh, no, I'm not an African. And they look like me and they talk like me and they come from places like the ghetto where I came from. But unbelievably say, I'm not African. I mean, I can't believe that you would say that, you know. So I'm fighting all that. You know, I'm fighting for the critical race theory. I'm fighting to get our history validated once again in this state where I live. And that's going to be my life. You know, it's lifted up my people. I said, I didn't do it for money.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do it for the spirit of young African-Americans. Not just those that are here, but those who are coming here.
Amen. Well, thank you so very much for being on. I hope that we can get more airplay here in North Carolina. I think our young people in North Carolina need to hear this as well. And I will be playing it from time to time on my various – I have two internet radio programs, and I'm going to be playing it on my programs as well. And hopefully we can get more people to play that here in North Carolina. Now, give us
it's so wonderful. Thank you so much, brother. And I tell you what, if you ever want me to come down there and perform it, I will. I'll bring some singers with me. I don't have any singers right now except in Detroit. That's a long ways away. But I would love to come down there where you are, or come up where you are, and have, you know, put a group together of 15 or 20 people and do a performance. It's very easy to do. You know, I can teach no time. I can have them within an hour knowing this song and having it up to where we can perform it for an audience. Yes.
Wow. Well, thank you so very much, Brother Clay Robinson. We'll be talking in a few minutes. I'm going to be calling you in just a few minutes. But I thank you so much for being on History Speaks Gospel Gold. We appreciate the great work that you are doing. And we could not stand tall if we didn't have people like you whose shoulders we could stand on. I pray that you will continue to have good strength and good health. I pray that the Lord will continue to strengthen you so that you will be able to continue the great work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to say, hello, North Carolina.
Now, give us that website one more time. Give us that website one more time.
Okay. Anthem3.com or www.JuneteenthAnthem.com. We're going to make it an official Juneteenth song. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. I'll be talking to you very soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Bye.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay. Uh-huh. Have a good day.
You can dig all day and never find the root. You're gonna get dirty, child, digging for the root. If you're looking for an answer, what's wrong with the truth? Keep digging, child, looking for the root. Look for love, it must be love. Look for love, it must be love. To be born is original. Original is a sin. There's no one who can fix it. It's forgiveness in the end. Look for love, it must be love. Look for love, it must be love. Keep digging, digging for the root.